listening to the CCA Podcast. Wisdom's what we're going to be talking about today. We are going through a series called The Dummy's Guide to Life. And it comes from these book series called, they're the Dummy's Guides. You've seen these. Last week I showed one. This one's Rabbits for Dummies. I like this one. We have a rabbit. And my interesting tidbit about me is that, I don't know if you know, but we're trying to start a farm in our backyard. Well, not really, but it seems like it. First, we started with a dog. I've never been a pet person. That's not true. When I was a kid, I liked cats, but I was really allergic to them. So when Livy and I got married, we didn't have pets, and I decided, you know, I'm just not going to ever have pets. And that was good enough for me. And we started having kids, and Livy started saying, you know, we should probably look into getting a dog. And I'm like, we're never going to get a pet. We're never going to have a dog. Well, never say never, because we ended up getting a dog, and not long after that, we ended up getting a couple rabbits, which, you know, a book like this comes in handy for me, because these are the books for the rest of us who don't know anything about rabbits. We also now have 4 chickens, and unfortunately, we also have a couple moles. Oh, man, I'm telling you what, those things are digging up holes all over the place. But we've got a farm, and so we need things like this in order to figure out how to manage our chickens and our rabbits. And we don't need one for the dog, but because I think dogs are, you feed them and they love you. They really are some people's best friends. Anyway, we call it The Dummy's Guide to Life. Because James is very practical. We're going through the book of James. It's a letter written by Jesus' brother. It's really, really practical, and it's easy to grab hold of. It gives really good insights in what life following Jesus looks like and how that should play out. So that's why we called it The Dummy's Guide to Life. Week 1, we looked at how perseverance helps us to stretch and grow. Week 2, we looked at how listening to God and helping others really brings credibility to our religion or our claim to follow God. Week 3, Pastor Scott talked about how our actions are an extension of our faith. And last week, we learned that our words carry weight. That our words can wreck things, or they can right things for a long period of time. And that our words are a window into our hearts. We learned about the importance of keeping our words in check, about asking more questions, and about focusing on encouragement. If you didn't hear those, if you haven't heard any of these messages, they're available on our website. You can listen to them there. Today's topic, you'll see in your notes, how to look smarter than you really are. That's a good one, right? It's going to be a little bit different this time than the last few weeks. Last couple weeks, I've really focused a lot on some of the stories. It's a little more of a focus today on words and their meanings, which is really keeping in line with what James is trying to do in this section. He's continuing his discourse to the teachers, and he's focusing on a main source of identity for those who are in positions of instruction. Wisdom. He's continuing with the theme of words and of those who use words. And in this section, we're going to see that there's a distinct difference between what James describes as the world's wisdom and the wisdom that comes from God. So if you have your Bible or your Bible app on your phone, turn to James chapter 3. If you don't have a Bible or the app on your phone, you can follow along on the screens, or you can grab a Bible from the pew rack in front of you. James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. It says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Starting with the first verse in that passage, it goes back to the Hebrew. The Hebrew ideal of wisdom was moral rather than intellectual. James is again showing that faith without action attached to it is worthless. You can't have one without the other. Faith influences actions. Wisdom influences character. The test of both our faith and our wisdom is found in the fruit of our lives. It shows in what we have planted inside of us. It's like the bottle of root beer that we talked about last week. When tipped over, what's inside comes out. With that in mind, I wanted to give a couple of root beers. Last week, I used the root beers as examples of what it, when tipped over comes out. And to one person, I gave real root beer, and to the other person, I gave it was water, basically. And they were so disappointed because I had tricked them. So, Sam, I wanted to, because I tricked you and didn't make up for it, I wanted to give you two root beers today. Thank you for participating. Val, in the second service, two root beers.
Thank you, Pastor.
And what do we remember about the root beers? We don't remember anything? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, when we're tipped over, what's inside comes out. Tell that to your neighbor. When we're tipped over, what's inside comes out. Try again. So, James is saying that wisdom isn't just intellectual, but is tied to the whole person and to their actions. If James was a painter, he would be continuing the brush strokes to paint a person who does not compartmentalize, but whose whole being is tied together. It must be obvious to others that one who claims to have wisdom must show it in their way of life. In this, we find two different forms of wisdom: the wisdom of this world entrenched within our culture, and the wisdom that comes from God. They are very different. Earthly wisdom looks out for me. Earthly wisdom looks out for me. If you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition of your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly and unspiritual and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. I read this from a theologian named Tasker. He states that any contentiousness or arrogance, any tendency to self-assertion, and a desire to glorify over others is an infallible sign that the essential qualifications for a teacher are in fact lacking, and there is no meekness of wisdom. Another theologian and philosopher, W.D. Ross, wrote in his book about Aristotle, said this: "Practical wisdom cannot exist independently of virtue. The power to attain one's end, be it good or bad, is not practical wisdom, but cleverness. Let the wrong end be aimed at, and it becomes mere clever roguery." I love that. Clever roguery. "And just as practical wisdom implies moral virtue in the proper sense implies practical wisdom." So we're going to break down what James is talking about specifically in this section and see the importance of the meaning of these words he's talking about. So buckle up and put your thinking caps on. There's a lot of Greek in this. Are you ready for it? All right. Bitter envy. Bitter envy comes from the Greek pikros zelos. It's partly ambition and partly rivalry. Tasker again said, if envy and strife are present, instead of teaching the truth, a teacher will in fact be asserting themselves against others and so be false to the truth they are professing to teach. Ambition and rivalry. That's what he's talking about when he says bitter envy. It's setting yourself up to try and better than someone else, to make yourself look good over others. Selfish ambition comes from the Greek word eretheia, which is a faction or a party split. This kind of thing we see in politics all the time, don't we? People are trying to make themselves look good in order for personal gain. And they're willing to split people into two categories. They're willing to divide people in order to get what they want. Boasting. Listen to this word. Katakouchomai. It's not just bragging, but it's bragging against something or someone. A great picture of this, sad to say, is Richard Sherman. Seahawks fans? Anybody Seahawks fans? Everybody knows who Richard Sherman is, a cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks. He is really, really good at what he does. He's probably the best in the league. He is also really, really arrogant. And a couple years ago in the NFC Championship game against the San Francisco 49ers, Richard Sherman deflected what was potentially a game-winning pass from Colin Kaepernick to one of the receivers. And he comes over at the end of the game, and he is talking to the media, and he is saying, "Don't test me with a nobody like this receiver. I'm better than he is. I'm the best. I'm not just the best. I'm better than he is." He is bragging not just about how good he is, but about how much better he is than the other. James says that if these things are present, we shouldn't boast about it or deny the truth. That denying comes from the Greek word pseudomai. It's to lie, or it's really a false thing that's designed to trick. We see this, we use this root word in our words actually quite a bit, and you find it in this word, pseudonym. You guys know what a pseudonym is? It's a fake name. It's a fake name. When I was in high school, I had a fake name. I would use it when, you know, because you're in high school and you do fun and crazy things. And so I was in jazz choir, and we'd get to travel to all these different jazz competitions up in Bellingham, over at Central Washington University down in Oregon. And so for some reason, I thought it would just be great to have a pseudonym, a fake name, so that when I met people, I could tell them my name was Jake Halifax. I don't even know where I got that. I think I felt like it was like a real good East Coast name, like Ivy League, Halifax. You know, I think that's actually a town name. But I had a pseudonym. Why? Because I thought it would be fun to trick people. James is saying, don't boast about it or deny the truth. Don't make someone believe something falsely. You can use what you say is wisdom to try and trick people. And you can look really good in doing it, but someone eventually is going to find out the truth. And they're going to find out that you tried to use that wisdom to trick them. James says that this kind of wisdom is earthly and unspiritual and demonic. The word unspiritual would probably be better translated sensual, because what James is showing is that wisdom that is not true wisdom separates the spiritual from the natural. It's driven by our selfish, sensual, self-pleasing, self-gratifying, self-serving motives. What's the key? What's the common word in there? Self. self. It's driven by the same desires that the devil promoted to Eve in the Garden of Eden. A false wisdom that pitted itself against God. It challenged his authority, challenged his sovereignty, and challenged his trustworthiness. The devil says to Eve, "Don't you know that God doesn't want you to be as wise as he is?" And in our carnal nature, we fall for it almost every time, don't we? We want to be as smart as God. We want to do things our way because we believe that we know what's best. And where does that often lead us? Man, it leads to trouble, doesn't it? Leads to all kinds of trouble. It leads to, and James talks about this, it leads to disorder and every kind of evil. Disorder, the Greek word is akatastasia, confusion or anarchy. It's the opposite of order and peace. And our God is a God of order and of peace. James reasserts an earlier statement from its opposite found in chapter 1. If everything good comes from God above, then the absence of what he has of God, and in that absence of God in wisdom, leads to everything bad. Where there is an absence of what is good and right, evil and wrongdoing abound. But here is where it gets good for us. Here is where we find what true wisdom looks like and how we can see it around us. Because the wisdom that comes from above looks out for others. The wisdom that comes from above looks out for others. James says that the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. And peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. This is James' way of displaying that the qualities that are just plain opposite of what we've seen above. Remember that God's way of doing things is usually very different than how we would anticipate them from our human selfish viewpoints. It's kind of like the movie Cars. Have you guys seen the movie Cars, the cartoon, the Disney cartoon? Oh, Pixar. Is it just Pixar? Isn't Disney Pixar the same thing? No? It's a Pixar movie. Thank you. I'll put that in my back pocket. The movie Cars, it's about this racing car who gets separated from his racing crew and ends up in this little podunk town in the Midwest. And he tears up the town and ends up having to do community service for this town, repairing the road. Well, he decides that he's going to have a race with the doc, this other older car that's in town. And so they go out to this dirt track and they start heading around this dirt racetrack. And Lightning McQueen, the main character, the race car, he hits this corner and just starts skidding out everywhere because he did not know how to drift. And Doc comes to him and says, "You need to turn left to go right." And Lightning McQueen has no idea what he's talking about. It makes no sense to him that when drifting around the corner, you have to turn the opposite way that you think you do and go with the slide. Turn left to go right. A lot of times it's the same way with God. We think that we've got to turn right to, we've got to turn left to, turn right to get out of the skid. But what God is saying is, no. You got to do things my way. You don't understand sometimes the way that I'm seeing and that I can see things differently and better than the way you can. So we look at these traits that James talks about as what are the good kind of wisdom, the wisdom that comes from heaven. And first of all, it is pure. It's clean and innocent and holy. It's the first and foremost. All of the others flow out of this purity. Remember that Paul said in Romans 12, the very beginning, don't be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good and pleasing and perfect will. You will gain wisdom by remaining pure. True wisdom comes from a pure, clean, innocent heart and results in the following things. First of all, peace-loving. This is a peaceful, quiet rest. It's the picture of a mountain lake, quiet, clear, and undisturbed, not a breath of wind on it. He says it's considerate. It's gentle and patient. And gentleness is the picture of a Roman soldier holding a baby. A Roman soldier holding a baby. One who could bring death, one who was strong and powerful, but knew when to use their strength. Gentleness. Because we could very easily destroy people with our words, couldn't we? And some of us, especially when James is talking about teachers, we have a great intellect and we have a great satchel of words that we can draw from. But we have to be considerate. We have to know when to use our words and when to withhold from using our words. Next, it's submissive. It's willing to yield to persuasion. Now, this is different. A lot of I talk about this a lot of times when I'm doing weddings, because you know, you go through the verse that talks about wives be submissive to your husbands and husband loves your wives, and I think there's a great misconception about in the Bible what submissiveness is. We get this picture that it's like UFC and someone's got the other person in an arm bar and they're tapping out in submission. But this is not that kind of submission. This is a submission that comes from a Greek word, eupithes. It's willing to yield to persuasion. It's open to reason. It's conciliatory. It's not stubborn or bullheaded. The wisdom that comes from heaven is full of mercy. Mercy. I love this word. Last week we talked about grace. Grace is giving someone something that they don't deserve. Well, mercy is kind of the flip of it. Mercy is withholding what we think someone does deserve. Mercy is not giving someone the punishment that we think that they deserve. For teachers in this wisdom, it would begin be restraint in allowing someone to stretch and grow. Not destroying with them with our words like we could. Full of mercy and good fruits. This good fruits. Where do we see a picture of this? We see it in Galatians chapter 5. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. Say it with me. Patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Forbearance. Ephesians 5:9 says this. The fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth. True wisdom oozes these things. They just come out. This is the good fruits that he's talking about. And the wisdom from above is impartial. It's against favoritism and partiality. Now, we skipped over a big portion of chapter 2 in James. And I would actually like you this week to go back and read through the first part of James chapter 2. So write that in your notes to take home with you and go home and read the first part of James chapter 2, because it talks a great deal about favoritism. Wisdom that's impartial doesn't show favoritism or partiality, and it's sincere, which comes from the Greek root word hupokrinomai. Hupokrinomai. It sounds quite like the word hypocrisy, doesn't it? This word is not pretending, and it's without hypocrisy. Since true wisdom comes from God, it manifests itself in truth and sincerity because God is truth. And Jesus Christ is the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through him. And the Holy Spirit is described as the Spirit of truth. Truth and sincerity are found in the whole triune nature of God. And I think that that is fantastic. And true wisdom is wrapped up in truth. So the wisdom of the world looks out for me, but the wisdom from above looks out for others. Finally, in verse 18, we see that James comes back with what he started with. Godly wisdom is to be lived. Those who have it are easily recognized by their lives. Peacemakers, those who sow in peace, reap a harvest of righteousness. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they would be called the children of God." His offspring, made with his DNA, mirroring him. What's inside comes out. What we plant, though it is a small seed, will grow in us and will bloom. It starts small and it grows big. And as we stated at the beginning today, fruitfulness is the test. The proof is in the pudding. So how do we gain true wisdom? First of all, we ask God. We ask God. We looked at this in James chapter 1. If we lack wisdom, we should ask and he will give it to us. There's something powerful about asking God because it means that we are not simply trying to rely on ourselves, but we are relying on him. God, I need your wisdom. First and foremost, we need him. Secondly, we ask those who are wise. In your notes, you'll see a bunch of proverbs. These would be good to go through and look through because Solomon talks a lot about wisdom in the Proverbs, and he talks about the importance of seeking wisdom from those who are wise. And so if we want to be wise, if we want to look like people who are smarter than we actually are, because smart doesn't necessarily equal wise, then we seek out other wise people. And we study with them, and we learn from them, and we emulate them. And we find that that wisdom then comes to us as we model what they have shown. The takeaways are just that. And I'll ask the band to go ahead and come forward. First of all, you can write this in your notes and take them home with you. How do I do this? I want you to pick one of those two things to put into practice this week. The first one, to say, God, I will ask God for wisdom. In all circumstances, in everything that I come up with, I will ask him for wisdom. The second one is that I will seek counsel from those who are wise.